Well, I have to admit that during 2017, I really thought that Our Lady would intervene because it was the 100-year anniversary of Our Lady of Fatima. And 2017 came and went, and then we started 2018. And 2018 has been explosive in the Catholic Church, probably one of the most important years in our 2,000-year-old history. I'm here today with my co-host, Timothy Gordon, and we're going to run through 2018. And what's interesting is, one of the very first stories, January 2nd in 2018, was that two Italian bishops criticized Amoris Laetitia, and one of those original two Italian bishops in 2018, before everything happened, was a guy named Carlos Maria Vigano. That happened January 2nd, and of course, once we get into August of this year, Vigano is all over the place in Catholic news. So, Timothy, how you doing?
Pretty well. How are you?
Been a good year?
Good year in a manner of speaking. Yes, sir.
What does that mean?
I mean, it's, well, in some senses, you know, these instantiations of the evil in the church are very good. We've been making the best we can of them. But in another sense, I mean, a lot of this stuff is rough, right?
Right.
Yeah. But people always ask us this, is it good or bad? And we say, well, it's all good because as the British say, truth will out. This is all we've been waiting for. This is all I've been waiting for since 14, 15, early part of 16, where, you know, Amoris Laetitia and its forerunning synods. I talk a lot about these synods because they were very important to me. I watched them closely. And then it just went quiet. And then the Dubia, you know, in late 2016, and then it just went quiet.
Yeah, 2017 was just a dud.
It was a dud.
We were all praying, fasting, all kinds of things, and, you know, the Dubia was unanswered, and it came and went. And like I said in the intro, I was like, Our Lady, never was it known, you know, that anyone that turned to you was left unaided. And here we are, twiddling our thumbs. January 1st, 2018, and nothing happened. And, you know, I know
the only thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
The only thing I remember from all of 2017 is Cocoa Puffs party in the middle of June of 2017. That's the most memorable thing to me, and that's pathetic.
You mean the cocaine fueled orgy?
Cocaine orgy. With the gay prostitutes.
In the Vatican, in the Congregation for Doctrine of Faith. So, yeah, that was like a little appetizer of things to come. In the year.
Yeah.
So it's
a party appetizer.
Do you think, Timothy, that 2018 will go down in history as kind of like a 15-17?
How could it not if the church historians narrate accurately? Agreed. Now, the question is sort of like the question that you and I always pose regarding the Dubia. Will it be honestly accounted for? If so, then yeah, it's really big. It's really big in terms of church history, just ecclesial history, right? I mean, this is the year that everyone woke up to I feel like it's the thrust of this show that, you know, on Taylor Marshall that you and I do. You know, it's like, this is what woke the sleeping giant, was the stuff with McCarrick. And it's I guess when we're interviewing, doing in our most recent interview with our most recent third party guest, interview.
You're talking about Michael Voris?
Mike Voris. That's when you said a line like, it was McCarrick. This is like the biggest of the bigs. You said something like that. And you're like, it wasn't just a big player goes down. It was one of the godfathers, he's just one of the godfathers. And it turns out
the godfather.
Godfather, yeah. Right.
If you want to look at a multi-decade legacy of corruption and abuse and financial disorder, he's the Don.
Which you also, in 2018, or very recently, you interviewed James Grine, and I feel like that shed a fair amount of new light. It's rare that in the news cycle and then the commentary cycle, which is much thicker than the slice of what we call the news cycle, the boom, the pulse, history happens, and then the commentary cycle goes on almost ad infinitum until the next thing happens, not quite to infinity. But you actually, with that interview with Grind about a month ago, 3 weeks ago, really broke new light on just how central McCarrick is. And then, you know, I was thinking about things sort of really thinking about things deeply after we interviewed Boris. And I was like, yeah, that's a good point. I mean,
yeah,
that's what woke the world up. So yeah, let's do it.
I mean, I don't want to talk too much about Grind because I don't want to be murdered, you know, or killed or run off the road or somehow
I was deadpan.
I suicided, you know, by the Clintons or something. But
you do wear concrete shoes.
I do not. No, I'm very, and like I said in the Voris, I'm very happy. If anything happens to me, it was foul play.
Yeah.
But you know, that interview showed that what we had talked about with St. Gallen. I mean, when we did that St. Gallen mafia video this year, people were, their heads were blowing up. Like, you go and read the comments and you read what was going on Twitter and Facebook in response to that video. You're just normal pew sitting Catholic who maybe knew a little bit about church politics and knew some names, knew some cardinals. But, you know, if you go to the average Catholic and say, what's the first name of your bishop? Most of them aren't going to be able to say that.
Right.
Which is fine. Right. So when that video came out on the St. Gallen Mafia, people woke up. You know, that was almost like a proto red pill moment talking about that. And then when James Grind talks about how his family is from St. Gallen and young Theodore McCarrick was going to St. Gallen 15 times, you know?
Right.
And has roots in St. Gallen, Switzerland, you know, started off as a young man there studying languages. Suddenly you realize, wow, this is an international global scandal that relates to the resignation of Pope Benedict, the election of Pope Francis, lots of shady things going on at the Vatican Bank, and abuse of minors and abuse of adults. All of this stuff is interconnected globally.
People go relook at that video, the Grind interview that Marshall did at about minute 20. It's around 19:20, 21. I was telling a local fan of the show, good college kid here in Bakersfield the other day. We got together and we were talking about it, and I was saying, go relook at that video. You can see Marshall's eyes get big at about, you know, because you're trying to be sincere.
I got kind of squinty eyes, but at that point, I'm like,
yeah. You just thought, you thought it was going to be just as I did when you told me you were doing it earlier in the day. You know, listen to this account. You know, I'd listened to part of his account with Boris, a little bit of the New York Times. I didn't see the George Neumeier interview with Grind. But you didn't think it was going to be shedding new light on.
No, I thought this was going to be the story of a man who had been hurt by McCarrick. And let's hear him out. I didn't know that it was going to be peeling back layers over an hour and a half. You know, and I was going to be hearing new things about the pontificate of John Paul II, pontificate of Benedict XVI, and, you know, stories of white envelopes packed with money and Chicago and LA and all these things that came out in that interview was, I mean, I got to be honest, like for a week after that, I was shell shocked.
You were.
Yeah.
How could you not be?
Yeah. He's like, are you okay, dude?
Yeah. You, I mean, so was I. Like, even though I was just like, dude, that's surprising stuff. I mean, yeah, this stuff hits, and it's not like, it's sort of reductive and a little bit of a cliche to say, but it's not like reading about it in the proverbial history book. Like, it's happening almost in real time when you're uncovering something that, to bring it back around to your question, will this be a world historical year or a church historical year? Like, yes, when you're trying to keep it in real time, and now the histories do come to light a little bit faster than they used to, right? It's still fresh. it's basically real time. And it's not like, oh, the schism just happened, or the Great Western Schism just happened, or we have all these antipopes. 70 years afterwards, you kind of start making sense of it. It happens in real time, and there's collateral damage. People, even the tellers of the tale, minor part that all of us play. Like, you do an interview and you're traumatized. How could you not be? So this stuff has a real world effect. People might not know. Your viewers might not see. And think about that. People, keep that in mind as you listen to just generally the recent history of the church, year in review, 2018. I think it's an important kind of, bear with you.
Yeah. And I want to take a moment here. We should, Tim, say just thanks to everybody who's been watching and supporting the show and checking in with comments and, helping out on Patreon or Super Chats and all that kind of stuff, kind of help us get going. A bishop called me, I won't say who it was, and we were talking about all these things and the Grind interview and McCarrick. And I mean, it just makes your head spin. And he was like, Marshall, like, you're just a philosophy you're a theologian, a philosopher. So right. Now you're like breaking news, And I'm like, right. I know it's weird. Like, people like would say, oh, you should have asked him this, or you should. I'm like, I'm not a journalist.
Yeah.
I've never trained this. I'm just a guy on YouTube.
Dude, I'm a comment.
I got my coffee and I'm just like talking to guys, asking them questions, and things come out. And man, I don't know what's going to happen in the next year. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah, so, I don't break news. We're going through LifeSite and a million church militant.
When I stand in front of a people, I'm talking about like 13th century philosophy, right? I'm talking about Aristotle and, Thomas Aquinas correcting Averroes and, these kind of things. Like, that's where I chop wood, not, contemporary events. So it's new to me.
Right. Yeah, people have to bear that in mind.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's look at some of this news. I mean, January 2nd, I remember this story, but I, of course, didn't relate it to Vigano, because who the heck knew who Vigano was? Yeah, he was the nuncio to America, but, doesn't mean that much. And on January 2nd, we read this story. Former U.S. nuncio joined statement calling Pope's reading of Amoris Laetitia alien to the Catholic faith. And guess who that was? That was Nuncio. I mean, that was Vigano, our Nuncio.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny. This is another sort of second principle of history, of recent histories. This precise phenomenon where I remember this. I remember sitting at my desk reading this story, alien, the word alien to the Catholic faith. Sticks out. I remember the block letterhead on LifeSite. But yeah, I did know that our nuncio had been a guy named Vigano. I know it through a local priest here that I'm friends with. What's up, Father Joe? But I did not know.
Oh, look, I have a visitor.
Hi, children. Who are these?
Mommy's not waking up.
No,
it's kind of early, isn't it? Hey, guess what? You're on YouTube. You want to say hi to everybody? Did you see Santa yesterday? Was he so nice? Yeah, he's a nice guy. All right.
Hi there.
I love you, girls. Y'all say hi to everybody.
Marco was crying about you.
Okay. They'll get a little snack. Okay. I'll see y'all in a little bit. All right. Love you, girls.
Mommy's not awake yet. Neither is mommy over here.
Yeah, girls. It's early. I love you,
they're
girls.
Looking back.
They're sweet. We had fun with Santa last night.
Did Mall Santa?
No, this was a big Christmas light extravaganza at the Texas Rangers baseball stadium.
Oh, off the
Like it filled up. They filled the whole field, infield, with just light, all kinds of stuff. It was incredible.
Up the 30 or 35. What is that there? Texas Rangers Stadium.
It's off of 30.
Yeah. 30, yeah.
Anyway, back to Vigano.
The second principle that people don't tend to think about when you look at, I'm forgetting.
Let's just start back with. We were talking about the Nuncio Vegan O.
Right. I was saying so. The phenomenon.
Sorry, the two little girls just rocked our worldview.
It's a good.
Yep.
Good,
that's what we're fighting for, is the future for our kids in the church.
That's right.
I want those little girls to grow up safe in church.
A church where they can say, what would my pontiff do, my holy pontiff do, exactly. As if it's Leo the 13th, you know.
Amen.
Of course. Yeah, but Vegano, I did know, and this phenomenon is funny when you go through recent history. It's just, all I was saying is, it happens. I'm sure it happens to everyone out there. Like, I did hear about this story. Some of the stories you just flat missed 6 months ago, right? It happens to all of us. But some of them you are like, I remember that. I didn't know this guy was this guy. Now, this is what we're always talking about. You can only connect the dots after.
Right.
And unless you're like Ed Penton or something and this is your job, you know, you're like, this dot and this dot connect. Which is precisely what happened with Vegan O. Oh, look, he was a source for good in the church. Like, you connected with your Why Did Benedict Retire vid. He's working for the forces of good in the Vatican Bank. Or what happened with, you know, it's happened a lot this year. You connected dots with your Grime interview. Wait, what? What? St. Gallen? What? 70,000 person city in the middle of nowhere in Switzerland? I only have one context for this. It comes from Daniil's autobiography. What the heck?
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, not only do we see Vegan O, really in January, you know, before we rolled tape here this morning, we were talking about in January of 2018, there was a giant dog pile of hierarchs getting on the getting into the game. So we had Vegan O, then we had this Archbishop. Let me get his name right. It's Archbishop Luigi Negri, and he joined with the Kazakh bishops. Remember the Kazakh bishops led by Athanasius Schneider?
Right.
So they signed this profession of faith, questioning Amoris Laetitia and upholding the traditional teaching on marriage and divorce and communion. So all this is happening in 2018. After they do all of this, the big news that people will remember also from January is that Pope Francis married this couple on an airplane, which is contrary to canon law.
And he addressed it specifically. He addressed like, that's where, you know, we already knew it was apparent that he felt this way. You know, I'm much bigger than canon law. He's got universal jurisdiction. So technically it's true. It's odd to hear a pope speak so fast and loose with the canon law, though.
See, you know? This is a good. This kind of goes back to also the Pope Francis in washing the feet of females and non-Christians, because people will say, "Well, the Pope has universal jurisdiction," and he does.
Of course,
we recognize that, guys. We aren't like sede vacantis. We recognize this. We believe in Vatican I. But it seems to me that the prudent thing to do, this is kind of going back to virtue ethics and Aquinas, if a man is the Pope and he has universal jurisdiction, it is prudent, it is just to go ahead and modify the canon law before you dispense with it. So technically the rubrics say that on Maundy Thursday you wash the feet of 12 baptized men.
Men.
Dear. That's the Latin. And he went ahead and dispensed with him. People said, well, he's the Pope. He can do what he wants. It's true. But he should have just gotten out a napkin and a pen and said, I hereby dispense of this rubric, and therefore I'm going to do it. Did you see the difference? Or like with this on the plane, he should have had a Monsignor next to him say, hey, can you write out a dispensation for what I'm about to do? And I'll sign it.
The former accords respect for the law. The latter inculcates a kind of a flippancy with regard to it.
Precisely. It's kind of like if we had some rule at the house, I don't know, I'll make up something like no TV on Saturdays. And then there's something on TV on Saturday that I really want to watch. I probably shouldn't just like flip it on and watch it. And then the kid, hey, Dad, what are you doing on Saturday?
Right.
I have universal jurisdiction over my home. I can watch a TV when I want. I'm the paterfamilias, right? Same with my wife. She could do it.
Yeah.
But I should probably address it and say, hey, I know we have a rule on Saturday, no TV for Family Day. But this is an important exception, and I'm making an exception just so we know. And they're like, okay, Dad's making that exception. That makes sense.
Right.
It doesn't scandalize them, and it doesn't make me look like a hypocrite.
For certain.
But in this situation, I mean, you're supposed to go through marriage prep. These people hadn't.
Right.
And you're supposed to be married in a church. You have to be married in a church unless you're dispensed. These people didn't have that. Now, of course, the Pope can do all that. He's the Pope. But it is a little bit scandalous to the faithful.
Yeah, and the latter distinction is the one that got many people. Again, because I didn't want to get married on a beach or anything like that, but a lot of kind of like half in, half out Catholic kids that decide to get married that are like, well, I'll get married in the church because my mom wants it, and they don't really know the rules anyway.
Right.
Or like, I wanted to get married on a beach with, you know, seagulls in the background or whatever. I mean, that's cool if that's your thing. But and they had to follow the rules, right? So this is where this comes back in some sense, not fully, because the Pope does have jurisdiction to make some ad hoc rules. But this comes back to the Peronism stuff where it's like, hey, if you're in with me, you're good. You roll how I roll.
And we can fudge rules.
We walk between the raindrops, you know? And it's like, yeah, to some extent that's true. Just if you're riding with Peter, you get to see the special sights in Rome. But it is so that's what most people complained of.
So that was a scandal. And I heard from priests, like, this makes my job so much more difficult, because when I'm dealing with one of these young people, like, hey, we want to get married at such and such a place. And they say, well, we can't do that. It's against canon law. I'm like, well, I just saw the Pope married some people on an airplane. Like, no big deal, Father. Why are you being so judgy with us?
Right, right.
That's not really fair to the priests around the world who have to make these. Sorry, I'm putting on a watch on a 3-year-old.
No, it is. It's like that scene in I think it's The Office season 3 when Michael doesn't want to deliver the bad news about having to season 2. It's on the Halloween episode. He doesn't want to deliver the bad news that he has to fire someone, and he keeps asking, you know, corporate to deliver the news, right? I mean, this is how priests feel. A lot of them have the Michael Scott complex where they want to be popular, which is the hilarious thing about The Office, is why everyone loves it. Everyone's had this boss that wants to be one of the workers and, you know, just hang out and go out for beers with the employees. And you can't really do that as boss. But and he doesn't want to ever lower the boom. Well, that's kind of the sense that we got more and more from Francis. Forget all the really grabby stuff that's been happening really since Amoris Laetitia came out, culminating in the events of the latter half of 2018. But in general, Francis, his general kind of equipoise is, I want to be down with the world. I want to be the nice guy. I want to be the unjudgmental Pope, the one to make the rules.
That's funny. Like the Michael Scott Pope.
He is.
Like, hey, I'm cool. I'm with it.
Yeah. Yeah. You can be friends too. And you know how there are some bosses that are scary, and I hate them. I want to hang out with you guys after work. If you're cool, they walk all over you. If you're mean, they hate you. I could hear Pope Francis saying this, like, to his to Daniels out on the loggia, like, this is how I'm going to fashion my pontificate. Watch the NBC's The Office. it's a funny thing, but this is where I heard the most complaints on the marriage thing was people who wanted to get married on the beach.
Right, right. So that's going on in January, and then by February. We have, don't worry, folks, we're going to get to the Summer of Shame. We're just doing a tee up here, right? Got to tee it
up. More happened than just that.
I think that's the important part of this show, is we're saying, hey, look, it's not just all about Vigano and McCarrick. 2018 had some early fireworks that we didn't recognize initially. But now looking back on the year, we see there was this pile on. So by February, we have 10 bishops who have joined with this, what they call the Profession of Immutable Truths about Sacramental Marriage. It was issued on December 31st, so New Year's Eve, and it was made public on January 2nd, as we mentioned already. And so this had 10 signees by the time we get to February, bishops from all over the world.
Right.
Initially spearheaded by the bishops in Kazakhstan.
Right.
So
best known of whom is Schneider. Yes. We all love you, Schneider.
I remember where I was back then. I was like, wow, I was like, maybe, you know, we have 10 and then we'll have like 15 and then we'll have 34 and then we'll have 100. And like, this is it.
Yeah.
And then what happened? It just petered out.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the tremendous hopes of the imagination, the hope of the imagination. You this is how it is when you're like, okay, it's kind of like you need your basketball team to make a major comeback, right? And they're down 30. They're like, they get a bucket finally, and it's like they're down 28. You're like, all right, what's going to happen here is going to get a steal, going to hit a three, it's going to be 25. We're going to get a stand, get another two, it'll be 23. This will happen five times before we know it. This will be an 8 or 9 point game, and that's a real basketball game. And that's your imagination, right? Every once in a while it happens, but more often than not, you imagine it being more grandiose than it is, and they end up going down by five more. They're down 35 in the next 5 minutes. That's what happened to us, churchmen, sons of the church, and daughters of the church in 2018, isn't it? I mean, we just went down further right. and further and further.
Yeah, we're just getting discouraged. And then, you know, also in February, we had the Chilean sex abuse that came out. And this is where Pope Francis really had to eat crow, because he accused them of making this up. He defended the bishop. Remember all this? And later on the year, he had to dismiss the guy, and he apologized. And the entire Conference of Bishops of Chile resigned. Remember this?
I mean, a little glitch.
And that was really a way to save face for Pope Francis, because Pope Francis had been dead wrong on the Chilean sex abuse. He had spoken publicly about it in February, and later on he realized, yeah, this guy's a bad dude. I got to get rid of him and maybe another guy. And so I think for him to save face, they worked out a deal where all the bishops of Chile said, we resign. And Pope Francis was the merciful one and said, oh, no, don't worry. Y'all can all stay in. And then we all moved on.
Well, no, that it was February that he was defending this guy, really kind of attacking blaming the victims. Of the alleged victims. And it was a span of 3 or 4 months. Was it May or June? That I'm not jumping all the way forward because there's stuff that happened in March and April as well.
I'm not sure, but it was. I think it was the summertime.
Yeah, I remember it being pre-McCarrick summer, so late May, early June. That made more an indelible mark on my memory than the February thing itself. I read that like, wow, this Pope's really going after these victims. But you know what? Even this late in the game, when I read that on, I think it was 1 Peter 5 where I read it. I don't think it was LifeSite that I read it at, that the Pope was kind of going after these people. I thought, okay, he doesn't have the most credibility in my mind, but maybe these are just incredible allegations. You know, we didn't know much about him.
As the reader. I don't know anything about Chile.
Who does?
Besides Chilean people.
Chileans. Yeah. Yeah. So I thought, you know, maybe these are just ridiculous. Maybe these are, I don't want to call them Pell type allegations, but the kinds of allegations we assumed were being brought against Pell, whether or not they were true, whatever happened. I mean, that's end of the year stuff. But then it was the doubting, the fleck of the mind that doubted, just because this involved Francis and Francis's people, was vindicated by summertime. And it was like, no, the allegations weren't incredible. They were quite credible.
Yes. Yes. So the next big thing, and we haven't talked about this yet, Timothy, is the papal posse on EWTN started rocking the boat. You and I have never talked about this, but Raymond Arroyo in EWTN and his papal posse, they started talking about the papacy in Rome, and, you know, they weren't being delicate about it. They were calling a spade a spade.
Well, I'm a huge fan of the papal posse. I'd love to have, we're always in need of our own little canonist, you know, and right. I'd love to have Father Murray.
Yes.
I'd love to get him on the show. That guy's so sharp. But now I'm gonna take a
shout
different
out to
approach.
Him. Go ahead and shout out.
What's up, Father Murray? I don't know if you know about our little gig here. Yeah, but we would love to ask you some canon questions. I have about 10 really specific Yep. Canon law questions. I ask my canonists in town, but I'd love to ask you on screen. We love what you do. You're a brave man. And I've been watching Papal Posse really, I think, be improperly, laudatorily indelicate with matters in the church since the first synod. I mean, these guys have been, it's crazy because it's elderly woman's television network, as some people make the joke, EWTN. And these guys just go hard. Arroyo, Robert Royal. What's up, Robert Royal? Great work at the Catholic thing. They're just a great squad. And then Father Murray out of New York. You guys have been doing it for a long time. So I really admire the work you guys do.
Yeah.
So what specific, did you say March event was it that brought out the papal posse?
So they got their first criticism from what we always call Team Francis, you know, the bishops and the clergy that promote the Amoris Laetitia. So this is, I think it was in March, and I can't remember who it was, but EWTN got its first criticism, like, hey, you guys are causing division at EWTN, the papal posse.
Gotcha.
And basically, yeah. You know, in the second half of the year, people like Cardinal Napier and others have been calling for the head of Raymond Arroyo.
Right. Right. Yeah. Napier just did it last week again. Yeah. So that's you wonder how much heat he's been feeling, because I don't know him. You might know him a little bit, but I don't know how much heat he was feeling after the synods. But he was not getting called out publicly, I don't believe.
Right.
I mean, not with Voris like opprobrium for Voris with any of the rigor or heat of that.
And I think, you know, the higher ups in the church, they, you know, they know who Voris is, and, you know, Voris is great and he has his own channel. But EWTN, almost everyone who has cable gets EWTN. Right.
Right.
You have to go looking for it. And I think that's why they're so nervous about Raymond Arroyo and the papal posse.
Right. It's mainstream beyond mainstream. It's as mainstream as our Catholic niche gets. We're an odd entity or quantity in the world, Catholics. We've always been odd, right? We're odd in America because it's a Protestant Enlightenment nation. But we're 1.2 or 3 billion strong, not practicing faithful Catholics, obviously. But we're a large, large presence demographically. But because there are so many unfaithful Catholics, we don't make our presence known. Most of these Catholics don't even count themselves loud or proud. And so we're a large, small, we're like a little big town, kind of like Bakersfield here in California. We call ourselves a little big town. So the biggest, the most mainstream Catholic media gets is EWTN, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So also in this time period, March, we have Cardinal Zen saying, hey, Francis, do not do this China deal. Not do the China. So we've got that going on. We also have Cardinal Casper say that same-sex unions are analogous to marriage.
Right.
Cardinal Casper is such a joke. No good. And then this is another big one that I'd forgotten about. In March, remember that there was a photo of like the writings of Pope Francis and a letter by Benedict XVI saying,
phony letter. Yeah.
And it was a fake letter.
Hey,
go ahead and riff on that. I'm going to work on my daughters here. You riff on the phony letter. Go.
So this was a real, I mean, this is one of the embarrassments of 2018 that people will probably forget about is it was basically a doctored letter to the people of goodwill in the church. And it's a heck of a thing. It's saying that you know, Benedict was basically saying the writings of Francis are eminent in the church. And it came to light through two separate events, really two minor separate events, that this had been falsified. What a heck of a thing to happen in the church. Afterwards, the response from Francis was, you know, we didn't know that this had happened. We didn't understand how it came to happen, but except people knew what was going on. People understood that, had an understanding that it was silly. So Yeah, this was not a good thing. Taylor.
I'm back.
So I was riffing some of this. Did you? This I just made a revelation. I mean, it is to me. I riffed for a little bit, and then I ran out of material. But so I need to make a cut.
Oh, we'll have to do a cut. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. I just hadn't got it. But then I paused. I got it up. Benedict wrote this letter. Guess to whom?
To who?
Vigano.
No, he's
behind everything.
The letter's addressed to Vigano.
March 17th, the Vatican released on Saturday the full text of Benedict XVI's letter to Monsignor Vigano, showing that the two paragraphs were concealed. Yeah.
Whoa, that's big.
He's like his huge main operative, dude. Yeah, how many different things have we said Vigano's here? The Vatican said it had no intention to censor the letter, but chose to leave out parts of it as the letter was confidential. The story as it developed.
Wow.
March 13th, Vigano was like his main operative.
Has anyone connected this? I haven't seen anybody connect this.
I haven't. No, I don't think people have gone back. They'll probably do it when they do their year in review.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe people knew who Vigano was with greater detail than I did.
Right.
Back before August.
Right.
But
I mean, this is great. This is great. Yeah. Let's just keep talking. It'll be a sloppy cut, but that's okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we just broke it right there. It's good. Hi, people. Yeah, we're still here. We didn't cut it.
Right.
So
there was like 30 seconds of dead silence where I was where I was looking that up.
Okay, but got it.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that.
I mean, it's just he's got to be his main operative. There's more. The plot thickens the more you look at this. See, it's just surprising.
Because some people said that letter was written. It was a fake letter, but the fact that it's addressed to Vigano from Benedict. I mean, it more and more looks like Vigano is like James Bond, and Pope Benedict. What's James Bond's boss name? I'm blanking out here.
Oh, not Moneypenny. That's his secretary.
That's his secretary. No,
what is this?
Moneypenny is more like Ganswine. Who's the boss of James Bond? Everybody out there is like screaming at the tape camera, telling us what it is. Anyway, that's Benedict XVI.
I was never a huge Bond guy.
You're not a Bond guy.
Oh, I do know his boss. I know it well enough to know that. Or think I did.
Q is the guy who does all the special.
He's the tech.
Tools. Yeah, he's the tech dude.
Yeah.
Man, we just blanked out.
Let me switch analogies and we can come back to it. For people out there, and no one in the rest of the world would know. For people out there who have read amazing all the letter names. That's right. M. Father Elijah, too, in Michael O'Brien's excellent
great novel,
which I really here I'm making a personal strong recommendation.
I double that.
Father Elijah, written in 1997. Prefigures so much of what's happened, not so much with molestation specific, but with intrigue in the Vatican, the way it works. When you hear Michael O'Brien tell the story of the way that this was inspired, this novel, he's praying and the way he got it. There's a great interview of him with Father Fessio at Ignatius Press, where it's like, wow, this sounds like it might have been like almost like private revelation. I'm not saying it is, but it was prophetic for what would come in the church in 20 years, 2017 was the 20 year anniversary of Father Elijah. It's a masterpiece.
I think I've read it three times.
I've read it same in triplicate. And guess what? Vigano kind of feels like Father Elijah, this special operative who is basically JP2. Is the Pope without being named. We understand it to be JP2. It was 97.
Yeah.
And he's got JP2 like qualities.
And he's like Polish or Slavic or something. Yeah.
He's Eastern Euro. Exactly. So I feel like Vigano is almost like the secret operative of Benedict. And that's a cool thing, but people should really go read that book. He's everywhere. I mean, how many times have we said this now? I was like, oh, that was Vigano too. Oh, Vigano was the guy on, go watch Marshall's video on why did Benedict retire? He's the bank.
He's the Vatican bank. He's working over the Vatican bank
to clean it up. It's so something more is going on here than we know. We already know that. We know that we don't know to have the, you know, we have the Socratic irony, but even more than we thought is going on that we didn't know is going on.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned Father Elijah. You and I were talking the other day because things in the church are so complicated and scary. And like you listen to the James Grine video and all, you realize like in Veganoids and Hiding, you realize like this is, we're talking about millions and billions of dollars. We're talking about people who do get murdered and killed in the Catholic Church. Like, we're not making this up. We're not being sensational. This is real, folks. Listen, if you're dealing with billion-dollar accounts, which is what the Vatican is, tens to hundreds of millions of dollars, there are shady people involved in this. They may not wear a cardinal's cap, but
well, the two people that went down, the only two named culprits that ever went down for what happened in 2012 in Blanco Ambrosiano were P2. Carbonieri, basically Italian Masons, the same lodge in Italy, in central Italy, that authored the Alta Vendita from you know, over 100 years ago, 150 years ago. That, I mean, again, we're just connecting dots as we find it. But this is not made up stuff. And like
with,
you said,
the thing with O'Brien is, and also we talked about Malachy Martin, we're like, you know, it's actually, those guys are pretty smart in that they wrote fiction to tell the world what's going on in the Vatican. Because if you just sit down and like and write flashcards, you know, or index cards of everything going on and then publish it as fact, like you could get killed. We're now seeing that.
Right.
And so Malachy Martin puts it into fiction. O'Brien knew some of these things as well. You read O'Brien like, whoa.
How did O'Brien know?
Fiction is a great way to sort of, we talked about this in our Tolkien video. Right?
Yes.
That you can use fiction and communicate truth, not just perennial truth like Platonic forms, but actual history in the now through it. And then you always have plausible, you know, deniability. You're like, well, no, those were just fictional, like Malachy Martin, Windswept House. Well, no, I wasn't talking about the Cardinal Archbishop of Chicago, but I was.
Right. Yeah. Faction, he called it.
So, yeah. Faction, fiction. So, anyway, I want to make a commercial here. Just got this. I don't know if you saw this. This is my book, Sword and Serpent in Croatian. Can you see it?
Oh, sweet. Yeah, I even like it. Looks like
I'm totally pumped. They changed the name a little bit. They put, I don't know how to say it in Croatian, Jurian, which is George, right? And then right here in Croatian, I had to look it up, Google Translate, thank you. It says Sword and Dragon. I mean, the original one is, this is the English.
That's beautiful. Yeah, it looks.
It's nice.
Looks even cooler in Croatian. Yeah,
I think it is. Like, look at this, dude. It's just really. Oh, it's super well done.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really nice.
So you don't like sign off on it? You just get a box of books and you don't know the details on how it'll look.
Well, I have the Spanish. I don't have the Spanish here. This is the English, right? I know what this is. The Spanish, I've been told by people who've read it, is excellent. They love, and people who've read the English and the Spanish say the Spanish is an excellent translation. It was done in Spain, in Madrid, with a really prominent press. And then people in Croatia were like, hey, can we do it too? And I was like, as long as it's done by someone who's good, because I don't know any Croatian.
Right.
So I'm hoping. And then there's also a Slovenian version in the mix. I don't know anything about Slovenian.
Anyway, I don't know anything about translated, but I mean, what a hot shot. You got translated into how many languages? Look at that beautiful cover. But I do like, it's impressive in the Croatian.
It is. I actually, it looks great. Anyway, if you want historical fiction, that's my version.
And you live in Croatia.
And to just go ahead and endorse this book, so many people, this is one of the most popular things I've heard, have said, I haven't read a book with Catholic themes as good as this since Father Elijah by Michael O'Brien.
That's
so
awesome.
So if I can share a torch with him, I'm a happy man.
That's awesome. To be fully honest, because I haven't read your work yet. I told you I'll read your I haven't read your fiction. I'll read it this summer. I've read some of your nonfiction. There is a Father Elijah sequel. We don't have to talk about it long, but called Elijah in Jerusalem. I think I'm in the majority. I was I love Father Elijah, one of my favorite novels of all time. I was underwhelmed by the sequel. Did you read the sequel?
I did, and I can't remember if I finished it because I was of the same way. I was like, man, this has not hit me like the first book.
It didn't hit anyone that I know.
I think
that
I did read the whole thing, but I do remember it was just like, next time I'd rather just read Father Elijah again.
Yeah,
I love Father Elijah. I've read it many times.
It's a sequel where you're like, I'm not getting it. Anyway, everyone go buy Father. I want to endorse that because it's so great.
It is Father Elijah's great.
Marshall's book, too.
And if you speak Croatian, you know who's Croatian is Cardinal Supic. Maybe I should send Cardinal Supic a signed copy.
You should.
Of the Croatian version. Say, hey, I got this translated just for you to honor your Croatian background.
You're the one Croatian that I really had in mind that needed to read this.
Do you think he would write me a thank you note if I did that? Cardinal Supic.
I think he would. Penned in blood, maybe?
Cardinal Supic. Anyone who's related to Cardinal Supic gets a free Croatian copy. I'm going to go ahead and say that. Just contact me. For the Supic family. All right, another big deal that happened in March was we found out about the Dictator Pope author. Remember? And he got suspended from the Knights of Malta.
Malta. Yep.
Yeah.
That was big. That was very big. This was right around my birthday. I remember when this happened.
When's your birthday
weekend? Mid-March, March 14th.
Oh, March 29th. March 29th. We should party together in March.
Oh, yeah, we should. Yeah. Keeping it real. I didn't know you're a March guy.
Yeah. That's why we agree on almost everything, I think.
That's right. That's got to be it. Everyone who was born in March has to agree with us.
Yep.
I remember feeling like that was a birthday gift. If you look at the date, I think that broke right before my birthday because I was like, this is an interesting birthday weekend story. I think, anyway, it doesn't matter, but that was interesting.
It was. And in April, we talked about recently, I can't remember which video, where the interview with Scalfari, where the Pope says there is no hell. And of course, Scalfari doesn't take notes. We've covered this before. What video did we talk about the Scalfari? Oh, it was on the death penalty video we did.
A few. Yeah, we talked about it in death penalty. We also talked about Scalfari.
Yeah.
I think he's done four pontifical interviews. We talked about that earlier than that as well. I forget which one.
This is the one where allegedly Pope Francis says souls are not punished. Those who repent obtain God's forgiveness and go among the ranks of those who contemplate him. But those who do not repent and cannot be forgiven disappear.
Forever.
There is no hell. There is the disappearance of sinful souls. And my argument was this is basically Pope Francis saying that God has capital punishment in the afterlife.
That was a good point.
He snuffs you out.
Which is weird because, when you said that just a couple weeks ago, that's a new paradigm because we're used to thinking of Francis, and I think he intended it this way, as loosening the screws, instead of tightening them.
Right.
But almost unwittingly, he really was tightening the screws and he wouldn't want to be characterized that way. But that, it's... In a way, I don't know. I don't want to see is sort of Sophie's choice. Do you evaporate forever or do you suffer the torments of hell? Probably the people in hell are like, I'd rather just evaporate. I'm guessing. But it's loosening it, I guess, ontologically speaking.
We ran out of time last time, but I just want people to know the reason why God, it's called annihilationism, that God annihilates the souls of the wicked.
Right.
So they say hell is not eternal suffering. It's just eternal disappearance. And the problem with annihilationism from a philosophical point of view, if you're a Thomist, if you believe Thomas Aquinas, is that God creates the rational soul, which has an intellect and a will, and it's made in God's image, the imago Dei. So that's why when your dog dies, the soul does disappear. Sorry, folks who think all dogs go to heaven, they don't.
They can be remade in recreation.
And the memory of your pet can be instantiated in heaven and bring joy to you. You would fully appreciate and see Fido in the beatific vision. So you're fully loving Fido. It's just that Fido didn't have an ontological, metaphysical soul floating in heaven. And he's not going to get the resurrection of the body. But humans do have the imago Dei, the image of God. And because of that, we do participate in the divine by having an intellect. Our active intellect participates in the divine intellect. And because of that, right. God will not destroy the soul of a human because it's in the image of God.
Right.
Because God, God created all things and said they were good. When he created men, he said it was very good. And because of us having a will and an intellect and participating in the same way that God does, he doesn't – just like when the angels fell and became demons, he didn't snuff them out. They also have an intellect and a will. So, right. So that's – so Phil, if Pope Francis really believes that, and this is from Scalfari, that is deeply wrong. It is metaphysically impossible from a Catholic point of view.
So that's the – is that the, that's the fourth Scalfari interview?
I thought it was the third, but maybe it's the fourth. I'm not quite sure.
All right. It's three or four, maybe just the third. But what people have to understand when the Francis apologists want to go back and say bracket anything he said to Eugenio Scalfari of La Repubblica, No, I'm not going to. There is an entire apparatus, we call it the mouthpiece system, that major world leaders have, that Marshall doesn't have, I don't have. Even big outfits like EWTN doesn't have like a handler that comes out, a spokesperson that says this the network means and supports. This that was said on yesterday's show is neither meant nor supported by the network. I mean, they can kind of do it afterwards. That's just called a redaction. But world leaders, especially the Pope, has Greg Burke that comes out and says, well, he means this. He didn't mean that. And we don't even really consider it a redaction. We consider it like a revision or an update, a slight modification. But they can slightly modify by saying, no, he didn't mean that at all.
Right.
You took that out of context.
It's very convenient, yeah.
It's convenient. Scrub it forever from the record. And all of the Scalfari interviews were groundbreaking in a negative way, radical, took some doctrine or dogma of the faith in a radical direction. And none of the three of them were redacted later, whatever verb I was using for it. And he kept going back to Scalfari, their buddies. Scalfari's like 90. Doesn't take, just takes hand notes during his interviews, reconstructs them by memory plus a couple notes. And it's just bad reporting. And, La Repubblica is like a longtime acknowledged Marxist Italian rag. Why go to him at all? So yeah. There was no, that I don't bracket it. He did say that. The way that news media works is, You it's an Italian paper. The paper's headquartered about a mile from the Vatican. I know where it's at. And he said it to this guy, a well-established Italian journalist. They didn't take it back. So he said it.
If he said it, if he didn't say it, all the Pope had to do or Greg Burke had to do was say, hey, he never said that. Scalfari's lying. And they
know.
And the Vatican never took it back.
Right. So it's on the record.
Yeah.
So
now another one a month later was when the Pope met with the victim and he said, don't worry, God made you gay. That was another one, whether he said it or not, we don't know, but that was secondhand. This is also when all the Chilean bishops resigned. We're now into May. April was all the German – in April, May, the German bishops were clamoring for communion for Protestants and communion for divorce and remarried. That was the big news. May, we have God made you gay. Allegedly from Pope Francis, the Chilean bishops and the huge scandal. This is where Pope Francis has to eat crow and say, yeah, I said it wasn't real. I said there was no problem there. And now obviously there is a problem.
Oops.
And every single bishop tendered his resignation. Kind of a big deal.
By the way, on the German bishops thing from April, I think Cardinal Mueller just brought this up yesterday or the day before. He was like, yeah, German bishops wanting Eucharist for Protestants. Remember that happened 8 or 9 months ago. Still a problem, and it's creating confusion in Germany.
Yeah.
Duh. But yeah, little update there.
Yep. So that kind of brings us, full into the summer. I don't see, anything that, anything else before we get into the summer of shame.
No, I think we covered, there's more in 2018 in the first 6 months than I even remember, because all I remember in 2018 sorry, this is a post-hoc fallacy or something, the way the mind works. All I remember for 2018 when I think of ecclesial politics and news is what everyone else right. thinks of. So it was hard. It was hard to go back and reconstruct what happened January through June.
Yes. Oh, June, he did appoint the heal me with your mouth. Who's the
Fernandez?
Yes.
Fernandez.
He appointed the who allegedly is the ghostwriter for Amoris Laetitia. He appointed him. His name is Monsignor Victor Manuel Fernandez. Made him bishop, appointed him. So that was kind of, well, what's going on there? And then also in June, a notable thing was Michael Voris came out and said, the Pope is wrong. And a lot of people, like, for years, people were like, Voris, why don't you say anything about the Pope? And he always stayed quiet. And this is when we see Michael Voris start also speaking out, which is, I think, notable, right. notable for the year.
He's the unfaithful bishop, you know, hammer. And, you know, the Bishop of Rome had always been, you know, privately, publicly, he would say this, you know, well, Bishop of Rome's a little different. And you know, whether or not, you know, reasonable minds can differ on that.
Right.
You know, he and I as friends always did. But as long as I've known him. But yeah, he joined the ranks of public, respectful sons of the church who are critics of the actions and words of the pontiff, not the office itself.
Yep. Yeah.
We should always say that, because I, you know, all of us live in one diocese or another, and that's, you know, right. some of us have special tasks for them. So
yes.
Yeah, that's right. That was June. Well, that was late June, right? After
Voris? No, Voris did it. No, Voris did it earlier June.
Before McCarrick?
That's what I'm seeing here. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then McCarrick happens at the end of June. June 28th, McCarrick was first removed from public ministry. It was announced on June 20th after a church panel substantiated allegations that Cardinal McCarrick had sexually abused a teenage altar boy 47 years ago while serving as a priest in New York, and the event happened at St. Patrick's Cathedral. Cardinal Dolan is the one who made that announcement.
Right. Right. Which is, we were talking the other day about how he didn't have one of his lieutenants make the announcement. He made it, he chose to make it himself, which is interesting.
Yes. And it was also revealed that the Diocese of Metuchen, I'm saying it right now, people, Metuchen, I think, I don't know, maybe I'm saying it wrong too, but
Freudian slip. Yeah. Metuchen.
Yes. We had a big Advent party, and we had someone from the Diocese of Metuchen just the other day, and I clarified my pronunciation. Metuchen and Newark had payouts to abuse victims of McCarrick. So we found out three things on that day. We found out that there's a credible allegation against McCarrick, against a young minor in the cathedral. And then we also found that there'd been a payout to a seminarian and to a priest in the Diocese of Metuchen and the Archdiocese of Newark, which shows a multi-decade-long pattern of abuse.
Right.
And then it was July 28th, McCarrick volunteered his red hat. He didn't repent, right. by the way. He just kind of said, you know, for the good of everybody, I give up my hat. So he was no longer in the College of Cardinals, which was big news. And that was in July of 28, right. July 28th of 18. So this was just a month of newspaper reports, news, everybody, like, you know, going nuts.
Let me clarify. It was a month, that first month after the McCarrick news broke, it was a full 24/7 news cycle by the secular news of schizophrenia. Remember, they're schizophrenic yes. when it comes to abuse. The Catholic Church, because they love gays, they love homosexuality, which is clearly the only rational etiology for the abuse here. There's no, people present this,
well,
like an open
I always
question.
Want to be careful, because of course we have, you know, hundreds of abuse cases of adult women and girls, but we just have to say it's 80-something% male. So right. Because if we say that, every time we say that, there's somebody who goes, yeah, but I knew a woman who was abused by a priest. So what you're saying is false, and they dismiss us. So I just don't want to be dismissed by people. We're just saying, in general, the majority of the cases have to do with adolescent, teenage, young men.
When you talk about a crisis as an aggregate of singular events, right? I mean, any molestation that's happened to anyone is a crisis, you know. But writ large, when we talk about the pages of history, the Catholic abuse crisis is a plurality. It's an aggregate of a plurality of many crises, individual molestations. And all I'm saying that's not arguable is when you're dealing with 4 out of 5 or more that are homosexual abuse cases, it's fair if it's over 51% to say this is a homosexual crisis.
Yes.
So that's every individual, you know, I know some priests in the diocese that molested altar girl. I know of priests in the diocese here that molested altar girls. That's a crisis like baby C, but capital C, the church crisis that's brought all this to bear is a crisis of homosexualism, which
in the life of McCarrick. Yes, he molested an adolescent boy, but he's also abusing priests and seminarians using his authority who are over 18.
Yeah.
So we see in the life of McCarrick the rainbow of variety of those he had relations with and abused, and it's all the full spectrum. Adolescent boys like James Grine, who came on the show, and the one in Manhattan, seminarians who are anywhere from 18 to 28, and adult priests, you know, older.
We should have a final word for 2018 on this if we're using this as our kind of end cap video for 2018. I don't know when we'll end up running it, but it'll be sometime in late December. And anything other than saying the crisis, the aggregate of pluralities of these molestations in the church is the crisis of homosexualism in the clergy is pure, and you can quote me, people, pure sophistry, right? Pure sophistry, because even DSM-5, secular psychology, identifies a black letter distinction between molestation of a post-pubescent is sex specific, right? Molestation of a prepubescent is non-sex specific. Like, boom. And I don't look to DSM-5 for wisdom, but that's using the playbook of the secularists, the playbook of the sociologists, right? Using reductionistic, deterministic secular psychology, using it against them. So it's an admission by a party opponent. DSM-5 says, we're not talking minor or whatever the legal distinction is. We're talking an ontological distinction. According to DSM-5, if it's someone who's gone through puberty, even if they're only 13, then you are attracted to it. It's gross, but we have to get into the specifics for a moment because I don't want people out there to be fooled by the sophistry. If it's the body of an adult, which is what puberty marks, the onset of the bodily adulthood, then that is not it is sex specific. Then that tells you something about the offender's sexual preference, something essential. All right, so enough of that. But yeah,
good. All right, well, we have the whole summer of shame to run down here in just a few minutes.
That's
okay. The good thing is we've already done 30-40 hours.
So only 30 or 40.
If you want to go and get us in detail on every single one of the bullets I'm going to say here, the good news is on this channel, there is a video talking about it. So
there's 90 minutes on each one.
We've done hour to hour and a half shows on almost every single one of these bullet points. So they're all
from here on out.
Yeah. They're all in the playlist. They're all in the playlist. So that was July 28th, August 14th, just as the news was dying down, Pennsylvania grand jury report comes out. And the big news was Cardinal Wuerl of D.C., McCarrick's successor, was named more than 200 times.
Right.
And Wuerl and Francis refer to his mistakes when handling some of these things. the school named after McCarrick stripped his name of it. People were calling for the resignation of, did I say McCarrick? I meant Worrell. The school named after Worrell. They stripped Donald Worrell's name off of it. People were calling for the resignation of Donald Worrell. And really, he skated through the rest of 2018, and he did end up resigning, but with a letter of exoneration from the Pope, and he's kept his red hat.
So, quick interjection. I had written Raymond Arroyo a personal letter. It was a plea to rename his show World Over to Whirl Over, and I redacted it after this happened. That didn't really happen. I'm lying. Just a cheesy joke.
Okay. Yeah.
The Whirl Over.
The Whirl Over. I mean, that whole time it was everything was Whirl. Everything was Whirl. Then the next week, August 22nd to 26th, was the World Meeting of Families in Ireland.
Right.
Right. And James Martin gave a talk. Cardinal Madariaga, probably said it wrong, he gave a talk.
Madariaga, yeah.
Cardinal Farrell gave a talk.
Your bishop.
Supich. Yeah. Supich gave a talk.
Right.
And then Bishop Barron gave a talk. And the attendance wasn't great. It was kind of a dud. In fact, the Irish bishops lost a lot of money on it. And they had to have a special collection saying, hey, we lost money on this Pope trip.
I remember. You know, I remember.
We need to get this back. But it was when the Pope was on his way home from that event, while he was on the airplane, Archbishop Vigano dropped Vigano, what we call the Epistle of Vigano, the first Epistle of Vigano, in which he just, 11 pages of detail, he calls out almost all the major players, including Pope Francis. He calls for Pope Francis's resignation. He even says in there that Cardinal Worrell lies shamelessly and prevails upon his chancellor to lie as well.
Yep.
And the big accusation was, Francis removed sanctions on McCarrick that had been in place, imposed by Benedict XVI, and that he had sent McCarrick to China to work out a deal with the Chinese. For me, those were the two big things in that letter in Vigano 1.
And you and I have tended to focus on the first.
Right.
Because people are wanting a China
episode,
and we should probably do it.
Yes,
Zen, who's really, I think, a living hero. Because Vigano made the connection so explicit, we don't talk about it that much, but wow. McCarrick, as much as Vigano we're finding is kind of on the side of good here, the axis of Benedict kind of trying to correct all this corruption, we keep seeing McCarrick pop up in opposite and inverse, right? All the China deal,
yes.
The deal with the Chi-Coms.
We're finding out more about the money with McCarrick, and Vigano's the guy auditing the Vatican Bank.
Yeah.
Under Benedict.
Yeah, it's like light and dark. That's weird.
So that's why I say Vigano, he's the James Bond.
He is.
Maybe Benedict is the M.
I still want to believe Benedict's the M.
Yes.
The jury's out on that, though. I mean,
we always talk about getting red-pilled on Pope Francis, and then Tim and I kind of off-camera have been calling it the black pill, and the black pill is like, oh no, Benedict is complicit, John Paul is complicit. How far back does this go? I mean, that's the real jagged pill right there.
Right.
I'm red pilled on Francis, but you know, when we look at the history and how this whole scandal happened, you know, it's obvious that it didn't happen in 2013.
No, which was Voris's big talking point, and it's a fair point. Much of what he says is a fair point, but this was his big justification for not.
You're talking about our interview with Voris?
No. It was his long-standing justification for not jumping on the Pope. He'd say, "Look, I'm not defending this Pope's actions." He'd say privately,
right.
but except this is a crisis that is, you know, almost 100 years in the making. You and I see it even a little longer than 100 years.
If you pull the thread on the sweater. Right,
it's
not just one
years.
Loose thread. The sweater starts to unravel. like a Weezer song in the 1990s.
Right. Pull this thread as I walk away. Watch
the
Vatican unravel.
Yeah.
It'll soon be naked. Well, yes. No pun intended there with this Vatican. But it's at least 120 years in the making. And Boris would always say, this is true. That's true. You know, but things have culminated here for a reason with this papacy and all that. So both, it's kind of both parties are right, yep. You know?
And then to throw gasoline on the fire, Pope Francis on camera says, I will not say one word. And it's up to you journalists to find the truth. And man, that when he said, I will not say one word, that is when, I'm not talking about traditionalist Catholics or SSPX or even EWTN watching Catholics. I'm talking about your normal going to the Novus Ordo 52 times a year.
Get married on the beach.
Yeah, just sort
Catholic.
Of, you know, they're like, what?
What are you talking about?
You will not say one word? And I liken this to like you're in a war and your buddies around you are getting shot down and you go to the general like, okay, what's the plan? He's like, I don't have anything to say.
I won't say anything. Yes. I might have something to say, but I'm not going to waste it on you.
This is when Pope Francis, in the minds and hearts of just the normal Catholic, that statement will echo in history. That is when he like lost 40 points right there. He went deep into the red with a lot of people, especially American Catholics, not just conservatives or traditionalists, your normal Catholic, even your left Catholics thought, huh, that's not good.
Even slightly left of center Catholics is the demographic that would really surprise. And the other demographic that would really surprise us, any non-Catholic Americans, secularists or Protestants who are even slightly right of center or anywhere in the center, everyone was just like, whoa, that's not defensible. You have to say something. Because he didn't deny it. Remember what everyone was saying? I was texting with Boris that day. I'd just come out of a great restaurant here in Bakersfield, had a great lunch. I remember, and then I looked at my phone and just my jaw dropped. And I think I'd been texting Boris about some unrelated thing. And everyone said, okay, at this point, the world media, well not everyone, I didn't say it. I gotta give myself a little credit here. Boris, like, okay, the world media, the left world media now will be excited to take him down. I was like, Mike, I don't think so. I don't think so, bro. I mean, and whether they do or they don't will tell us what we've been wanting to know. So that gave us extra methodological information as to how deep the connections are between the world media and this pontificate.
Yes. Yes. So then we have Cardinal Ouellette steps into the game, and he, in a way, we were kind of talking on our video on Ouellette, which is you can watch in the playlist on the channel. He confirms that there were restrictions placed on McCarrick for appearing in public and for traveling. So we kind of said, hey, he actually did Vigano a favor here. He vindicated Vigano's claim.
You or I, or both, I forget who, even kind of speculated, could he be still secretly on the right side?
You kind of said, I think Ouellette's in favor of Vigano. I don't think he is.
Maybe. I don't really think that. I was being quizzical.
Right.
You know, like could Russian Ouellette be, as I lovingly call him, he's taking a risky move here.
He did.
Could he be secretly trying to,
he's carrying water for Vigano.
Right. I don't really believe that. I just like to say stuff. Yeah. I just throw crap against the
And what drives me crazy, but, like, hey, shout out to Jong, who's one of our commentators beneath all of our YouTube videos. You know, he's like, oh, Ouellette proved that Vigano was lying. No. Everybody recognizes that Ouellette proves that Vigano is telling the truth. That restrictions, Ouellette says restrictions, Vigano says sanctions, whatever you want to call them, restrictions were placed on McCarrick.
And, they existed.
And Pope Francis removed them.
Saying otherwise is counterfactual. Yes. That's what Ouellette proved to us. That's big.
That is
he might have been characterizing Vigano is a meanie for talking about him, but he verified, he absolutely certified as a party opponent,
yes,
that they existed. And that's all that matters. I don't care, you know, to hell with this characterization of the events. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, basically the rest of the year, we've seen a Vigano 3. We did a whole video on Vigano 3. It's a very popular video. Supich, since Wurl has declined in the latter half of 2018, Supich's stock is way up.
His star is rising.
It's very obvious that Supich is. I'm going to make one prediction for 2019, and that is that Supich will be transferred to Rome. He either will be appointed to the C9, the council of the super cardinals, or basically be a titular Archbishop of Chicago, but do most of his work in Rome, or he will be officially transferred out of the Archdiocese of Chicago and placed in Rome. And the reason I think he'll be actually transferred is because there's so much scum and dirt in Chicago. And the Illinois Attorney General is opening a case against the church in Illinois. So I think Pope Francis is going to rescue and sweep him out before what happened to Wurl happens to Supich, and bring Supich to Rome, give him make him a prefect, give him some high office like he did to Cardinal Farrell, and keep that guy safe, and let him be his American link to the church in America, helping appoint bishops, helping to regulate. That's my projection for 2019.
And if it's right, if it proves right, I remember you saying that back even 2 months ago. So you get a longer provenance than just a December prediction. Yep.
The other thing is, we've seen, you know, the latest stuff is, I think the grind video is important. I think that revealed a lot. The USCCB meeting was a total flop. Pope Francis intervenes and says, don't vote policies.
Sanctioning.
Policies for bishops with regard to abuse. Don't do it. Wait till February. That really ticked off a lot of people. Other than, I will not say one word, that event. And then they voted on the floor,
right?
Kind of a token gesture that didn't really mean anything. Let's ask the Holy See to release all files on McCarrick. Voted down. The bishops voted against it. That USCCB meeting was the second hit to this, the normal pew sitting Catholic.
Centrists in not in the church at all, not even a little in the church. Just average American centrists are like, I heard, a lot of secular papers covered this, that the Pope is really playing this down more even months afterwards. He's not even cleaning up shop a couple months afterwards with the luxury of retrospection.
Right. And what I've heard from people in Rome who are close to all of these events is they're saying, look, the hierarchy in Rome, the curial officials, just think this is an American obsession with sex and sexual sins. And they drink their Sambuca and they say, ha ha, and they think it's going to go away. It's not. 2019 is going to be a dumpster fire. That's my other projection.
Because A bunch of bishops are going to go down.
Cardinal Pell just went down. Whether he was guilty or not, he went down, right?
Right.
Two other cardinals in the Pope's C9. One third of the C9 is out at the end of 2018. Right. It is looking really bad.
It's going to be the C4 explosively. It's going to be the C4 by the end of 2019.
Is that your projection for 2019, the C4?
That's mine. More cardinals go down explosively. There are only four cardinals left. I think that would be poetic justice.
Yes.
C4 explosive. Yeah, a bunch of bishops are going to go down. We have some intimation there that
auxiliary bishop in L.A. went down.
My archdiocese. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What are people saying about that?
They're like, who is this guy? At first, when it was an auxiliary bishop, everyone I talked to in the diocese was like, is this Barron? Because he's the most famous auxiliary of LA.
He's the one they know.
Yeah, he's the one they know. And it's no. And obviously, it's an auxiliary, so it's not the head.
It's not Gomez.
Gomez.
Yeah.
Do you know Gomez at all?
Yes, kind of.
He's Opus Dei.
He is Opus Dei, yeah.
And he's friends with, like, Well, I don't know if it's
lots
public.
Lots of good folks, but...
He's friends with lots of good folks. Yeah. I shouldn't, yeah. But anyway, yeah, people who kind of talk about this stuff at school and in the diocese were like, whoa, this is our neck of the woods. It's getting local. It's like, it's always local, bro.
Yeah, it's local. It's going to be crazy. So I think we could wrap up here. Just I'll end with a word of encouragement, and you can end with a word of encouragement. Or if you have a projection for 2019, you can share that. As we always say, look, the Lord Jesus Christ is the redeemer of mankind. He has a plan. I really think that he is orchestrating and moving the pieces right now to purify the church and bring about a great era of reform. We talked about this with Michael Voris. I mean, we have people now who are like, what are Ember Days? I want to fast for the clergy. People who are looking into traditional liturgy. People who are saying, hey, maybe our seminarians should have a more scholastic training and study Thomas Aquinas. People are starting to say all of these really good things because they're realizing, we never really got that springtime of evangelization that John Paul II said was happening. We're not having a new Pentecost. Everyone's looking around and they're like, man, we're in a dumpster. Like, this is like Borgia level corruption. And it's not just in the USA, it's in Rome.
Right.
So we have to now rethink everything we thought was going to happen under John Paul II. We now have to rethink everything. And that has to do with how we interpret the documents of Vatican II. What about canon law? What about seminary training? Everything. So I'm very hopeful. I think this is good. And I think, you know, jumping out of the ship right now, leaving the Catholic Church right now is ridiculous. Like,
ridiculous.
We're in the 10th region of the night. We're about to have a giant dawn. And I'm not saying this year, 2019. I'm saying maybe it could be 5, 10, 15 years. But I think things will get better because we're in a downward spiral, and it can't go on forever. There is a bottom to hell, right?
Right.
As Clark Griswold said, we're on the threshold of hell.
We're at the threshold of hell.
Yeah, right.
Give
your last word.
Yeah, so you're – no, I mean, I agree with all that. But I'm not quite as optimistic. When you, Voris, and I were talking off record, you and he were agreeing like perfectly. Like, I think this, I don't know. I think the history shows it's hard to connect dots until after. Mm-hmm. I hope you're right. And I think it's totally reasonable. You might be right. I mean, I'm hedging my bets. It could rain tomorrow unless it doesn't, you know, I mean, that's kind of a dumb way of putting it, but I just want to say, even if the free fall continues and we haven't hit bottom yet, the bottom of the well, still, your lead-in comment is really what governs. God is sovereign. Jesus is good. No matter, the free fall might continue. I always go back to the Mike Tyson quote, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth, right? And I you know, anyone who's felt like they hit bottom in their own life, this is so true. You have this plan for your life. We have this plan in the bosom of the church for the life of the church. And we think, oh, we're going to have a new evangelization and We're gonna bring the new Pentecost and all that. I mean, that was never my plan, but that was the guys in the 70s. And it just backfired. It became this dumpster fire. So then we got hit in the mouth, and maybe that was the plan of some of the guys that planned it, but not all of them. Some just were kind of useful idiots, Lenin's useful idiots. Regardless of whether things go the way you and Voris were saying the other day, or the free fall continues, no prediction from me. Aside from my one prediction is more bishops go down first quarter of 2019. Aside from that, all that you need to know is Marshall's lead in sentence to that thought. God's sovereign. Stay with the church no matter what, even if we stay in the 10th region of the night, the darkest part of the night for decades to come. Like, who cares? You know, look at Israelite history.
Right.
So it might last the rest of our lives. Maybe it won't. There is reason to believe, adduced by you, Voris, even Skojic at 1 Peter 5 is now sounding a little more optimistic. There is reason to believe it might come to an end, but if it doesn't, history takes funny bounces. History is a lopsided ball, right? It takes funny bounces. So even if it's bad, where else would we go, Lord? Peter's words.
That's right.
What people need to know. There's nowhere else to go. It's still the truth.
Nowhere else to go.
We still have the deposit.
Amen to that.
Says I.
Amen to that. Okay, so A happy new year to everyone. Remember, January 1st is a holiday of obligation, unless your local region has dispensed it. Here in America, we have it. And keep praying the rosary. Stay close to Our Lady. Make faithful and pious Holy Communions when you receive. Really realize this is Jesus in my mouth. This is the second person of the Most Holy Trinity incarnate. And just live your vocation.
Love receive on the mouth, people. Receive yes. on the mouth. Let's not mince words. You can do that.
Yeah.
Do the mouth. Please, everyone out there.
Reverent.
Receive yes. on the mouth and request, even if you go to a Novus Ordo.
On the tongue.
On the tongue.
On the mouth, yeah.
Yeah, it just sounds less weird. People are more, I notice the students and if you're
worried,
weird when I say
if you're worried about it, that he's going to touch your mouth, you're doing it wrong. Do not be right. a slot machine like this.
Yeah.
He's going to touch your mouth. It's gross.
Here's
how you do it, folks. It's going to get nasty. You ready? You stick your tongue out. My tongue's brown because I'm drinking coffee. You have to, if the helicopter's going to land, it has to have a big landing pad. If you close your eyes, tilt your head back and stick your tongue out, he can place on there and there's going to be no contact.
Right.
This is what our priests always say. If you receive in the tongue, please stick out your tongue.
Right.
They don't want to have a little slot. It's impossible.
Don't give them an excuse to say no. Because a lot of priests will take it.
Exactly. So, okay.
All right.
Great. Well, Happy New Year, Tim. To everyone watching, thanks so much. God bless. And we'll see y'all in the videos to come for the next year.
Jesus, Mary, Joseph, be with us on the way.
Amen.
Has anyone ever asked you to explain a Catholic topic and stumped you? St. Peter, our first pope, once wrote this. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. The problem is it takes years and even decades to study sacred scripture, the church fathers, magisterial documents, and councils. Most of us don't have that much time, even if we wanted to. So what if there were a way to have all of these answers prepared for us literally at our fingertips? My name is Dr. Taylor Marshall. I'm the founder of the New St. Thomas Institute, and we have created an online library of video and audio resources answering the most common objections against our Catholic faith. As a student member of the New St. Thomas Institute, you'll have access to our short and informative lessons by searching for the topics that interest you. For example, how to explain the Crusades, how to answer the top 10 atheist objections, how to answer Mormons when they come to your front door, and how to easily and quickly explain the Eucharist, the Blessed Virgin Mary, the papacy, the sacraments, and much more. You could easily spend thousands of dollars taking classes at universities or seminaries, but our tuition is the most affordable on earth. Plus, you'll have free access to our popular certificates in Catholic philosophy, Catholic theology, Catholic apologetics, church history, and New Testament studies. So if you're struggling with a topic and you need help, we have resources and answers waiting for you. Take your faith to the next level, become confident in your Catholic faith, join the New St. Thomas Institute today.